idea that we were talking about before. They have their labels with not only what's in them, but also, I believe, the sequence in which they should be considered. While there's no retransmission, it's a UDP kind of game, or can be a UDP kind of game. If I recall, the way that works is that you can see how many of those drop, start to see the degradation in the audio or the video. And generally speaking, my experience is they go hand in hand, but not always. I mean, you know, they're clearly capable. One will disappear or degrade, and the other one won't, either audio or video. But in the majority of cases, I see that there's a synergy between the two.
Digital television. He's going to have to make modifications to his
over-the-air broadcast reception equipment quite often. Even a person in a metro area getting a strong signal with ghosting might be in trouble. I had the impression that as the generations of the decoders become better and better, that the tolerance to multipath is going to become greater and greater. I had the impression that, digitally speaking, the demodulator acts a little bit like a digital delay line bucket brigade circuit with a whole bunch of taps. And what the encoder is doing, what the demodulator is doing, is choosing which of the taps, at what positive or negative amplitude of those taps, go into a composite combiner network in order to make all that multipath add up correctly in the time domain, add up in the energy domain, so you get the highest possible signal-to-noise ratio with the least amount of inter-symbol distortion. That is the trend that we're going toward. I am curious, Eric, as to whether or not you have wind of the fact that even higher generation demodulator circuits are possibly in the laboratory at this time. KE2BJ, K2LIW.
K2LIW, KE2J. Now, what you're really talking about is the equalizer, and your research continues to go on. You know, we talk about, it's like talking about imaginary numbers. What's the pre-ghost, what happens before the main signal, and what's the main signal, and the ability to try and determine what belongs to what. By the way, some of the newer receivers don't have the lip-syncing issue because as the various different manufacturers have improved their software, they've taken stuff like that into account. So the earlier stuff is more prone to that. As far as the lip-sync goes, the earlier stuff is more susceptible to multipath. The newer stuff is much better at it. That's why the new boxes that they're selling these days a lot better than that box that you bought 2 years ago. And there's also, it takes time to tool up and put a new chip in production. And if you happen to be the manufacturer that developed it, you know that it's going to go into your product before it goes into anybody else's, which we typically see happen. And there's also research going on into active antennas, active receiving systems, whereas the box actually gives instructions to the antenna on how to minimize what it sees in terms of multipath and how to maximize what it sees as the main signal.
Does the original broadcast contain any kind of a timing code on the audio and the video so that a sophisticated demodulator could always sync them up? I'm getting the impression that that timing code for audio and video maybe doesn't exist. The extra bits have not been allocated to that function. That's question number one. Question number two, when I've got an adaptive equalizer, how fast can it do it? If I've got a limousine where the television set in the back seat of the limousine is getting digital television reception while the limousine is traveling down the expressway at 70 miles an hour, can the equalizer keep up with that? KE2EJ, K2LIW?
The short answer is no, it doesn't exist. The long answer is there's something called EBSB M/H, M meaning mobile, H meaning handheld. And if you look at the cell phones, you'll find that there's something that will allow you to, not using the 3G network, but Verizon has it in some of their phones. There's a system that was created by Qualcomm, which is one of the competing systems, where they've been buying up Channel 55 slots all over the country and forcing the people that were on 55 to go digital. For example, 55 on Long Island does no longer transmit sound analog for more than a year now because that's got one of those cell phone transmitters in it now. I think they paid them something like $6 or $8 million to vacate, and they went digital only. But since there are all of these television transmitters around, and it is a business, and it's money-oriented, there's a push on to have a compatible mobile and handheld form of transmission actually, instead of using 8 symbols, it only uses 4 symbols and 2 symbols. Handheld uses 2 symbols. The mobile uses 4 symbols. It gives you a reduction in bandwidth, but it's compatible, and that can be transmitted simultaneously with the 8 symbol. So that technology is, you will probably see it coming around pretty soon, but a lot of the cell phone providers and manufacturers, when they get stuck doing one thing, they tend to stay with it, but it's, there's so many different systems at the moment that this country has a lot of transmitters around, whereas that, you know, it seems to make good business sense to try and move folks over to that system. And actually, on Glen Oaks, there is a, let me let it drop.
Yeah, AT&T sells it too.
Yeah, on the, at Glen Oaks, there was a one system there for cell phones that has since gone dark because I don't think they can sell it. They're not doing a very good job of selling it, so you have to see what the marketplace does. But as you may or may not be aware, throughout the country, there has been and continues to be very small cell phone companies that cover their particular area. But, you know, that's slowly changing because they're being bought up by the AT&Ts, the Verizons, and the Sprints, and they're winding up being the three major providers throughout the country. And it's those folks that are going to decide which technology they use. So, there you go.
Great information, Eric. If I'm on a back road in my limousine, and I've got an ordinary 8VSD digital decoder, equalizer, on the TV set that I want to watch in the back of my limousine, and the limousine on that back road is moving 5 miles an hour. A rough guess, will the equalizer be able to keep up with me? If the answer is maybe yes, my next question is going to be, where is the threshold of grief? Beyond 10 miles an hour of motion? Assuming I'm in a relatively strong signal area, but quite a bit of multipath exists because automobiles are always down at ground level and they're below the trees, water towers, buildings, and whatever. So there's always a significant amount of multipath that moves as the vehicle moves. And by the way, I'm amazed that the cell phones with their digital service, thank goodness it's a lot lower bit rate, can handle that. A good cell phone these days will most of the time keep contact while you're moving at 60 miles an hour. But where's the threshold of grief on the digital video? KE2EJ, KE2RIW.
KE2RIW, KE2EJ. Well, don't forget, the modems and cell phone are simpler. The method of transmissions are a little easier. We don't think about Doppler when using, two symbols or one symbol. But when we start to get to more complex stuff, Doppler plays a role. But I have seen demonstrations in Las Vegas of mobile installations of 8VSD receivers with active antennas and super whoopee-doo equalizers, and it kind of works. So, I mean, it's not an impossible thing to happen. It's just the technology's not there yet. The focus really is on mobile and handheld using lower bit rates and less symbols, because then you can then start to play with correcting for Doppler, correcting for multipath is not as big an issue. Symbol time gets longer, so you got to remember that even though this looks like broadband noise, the zero crossings only line up at one particular sync point. That's where the pilot comes in to turn in the receiver, where that sync point is. And the rest of it is just random noise. If you want to, you can create symbols in those spaces by just a matter of, you know, clocking it out at the right point in time. So the technology marches on, development marches on, and in the next couple of years, we'll see some real viable answers to some of those questions.
My friend at the National Association of Broadcasters told me that the current equalizers can tolerate something like plus and minus 75 microseconds of time delay. He didn't say nanoseconds, he said microseconds, 70 to 75 microseconds. or plus and minus. Now, for the minus to be reasonable, I guess the system says, yeah, that may not be the real over-the-air direct signal. This is the strongest one. Happens to be coming from a bounce on the building. Therefore, the others are all negative with reference to it. Did I hear that correctly? And are they really being able to design with that much time shift of the taps on the virtual bucket brigade delay line circuit? Over to you, Eric.
Yeah, well, it's actually right now the best one's minus 70 microseconds and plus 120 microseconds. It's always longer on the backside at this point. Consider the symbol is 92 nanoseconds or 97 nanoseconds, so we still got a long way to go, you know. But yeah, and by the way, that technology is not a physical bucket brigade circuit. It is software. Software makes the little transistors in the chip that's doing that arithmetic calculation, make them faster. You can do more calculations. You can squeeze the time down.
Wow. What a leap of faith. Our government, our FCC, our Office of Telecommunication Policy, our National Association of Broadcasters, I may have said them already, the consumer electronics industry, what a leap of faith they've made to flip over to this. They thought the time was right. Reminds me a little bit of the leap of faith that President Kennedy made in 1961. When he said, I'm going to send a man to the moon and bring him safely back to the Earth. At the instant he talked to his science advisors and got the information that, yes, this is possible, in reality, they gave him the wrong information. The answer was absolutely positively no at that time, but he didn't know it. If some little old engineer at Grumman Aircraft in Bethpage hadn't invented the concept of lunar orbit rendezvous, where the hold-on spacecraft doesn't land on the moon and the hold-on spacecraft come back, you just land this little bitty module that comes back, that made something like a 5-to-1 difference in the size of the main booster that leaves the Kennedy Space Center when you blast off. I mean, that Saturn V was 5.5 million pounds of thrust. Can you imagine trying to generate one at 25 or 30 million pounds of thrust? There isn't enough money in the United States and the 4 or 5 other countries in the world to do that at that time. So at the instant he made the pronouncement, and he thought the answer was yes, the answer was no, and thank goodness somebody invented the technique 4 years downrange, which made it possible. I wonder if we're running into similar things here with digital television. A leap of faith was made. There's going to be some growing pains. There's going to be some glitches as we establish it. But when it comes to modern-day digital signal processing and all this other crazy microprocessors that are going on, parallel processing techniques and whatever, I'm getting the impression rapidly that faster computing, more multi-channel, multi-path tolerance capability, faster tolerance adjustment of all of that, all of these things right now that we're dreaming about are going to happen. Am I too far off to the Neville Neverland here, Eric, or from... I mean, you're touching the...
Repeater, timeout, repeater, timeout, cancel.
You're touching and working with the hardware on a day-to-day basis in the major metropolitan area of planet Earth. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but you're involved with two significant television broadcast studios in a major metropolitan area of planet Earth. So therefore, you're touching the stuff, you're seeing the stuff, you're talking to the people that are doing it. Is some of what I'm speculating likely to take place from what you see? I know this is a very iffy question, and of course your answer is going to be speculative, but I'm asking your gut feel from where you stand right now. K2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2EJ. All right, well, at the time, it was about 1996 when they decided what the standard was going to be. Think about it, all those years ago. Actually, it was a political decision. Why? Because Zenith at that time was still a wholly owned United States company. They came up with the 8VSB concept that came out of their lab. And there was a competing system called COFDM, ODFM, form of ODFM, that the Europeans had decided on. And actually, the Sinclair Broadcasting Group wanted COFDM because it didn't have the issues with multipath. But it's great in Europe because, you know, one of our great B areas in Europe will put you in another country, so they don't need to have that much of a reach. Whereas in this country, the nice thing about analog, the way we do it, that's why we transmit sync as positive and video as negative, so we can make that reach into what we call our grade B areas and not put a lot of money in electricity to get that signal out that far. COFDM, if your electric bill is, say, about $15,000 a month now to hit your grade B area and your analog, if you were to go to COFDM, you'd probably be paying $30,000 or $40,000 a month for your electricity to make it an almost appreciable coverage area, and that's where 8VSB has the advantage. The same coverage area that I spend $15,000 a month on electricity for, I can do for about probably $8,000 worth of electricity. So there's the economic aspect of it. Let me let it drop. It is a very sound transmission system. The transmission system has not changed since the day it was invented, really. And the improvement, and there's still room for improvement, is in the receiving system. But the other interesting part that people in the broadcast industry didn't really have to make themselves too much aware of is because the number of sets that are on antennas versus the number of sets that are on cable and satellite is a huge difference. Except now, in this economic environment, people are beginning to drop the cable and satellite connections like flies because they can't really afford it. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens next, so to speak. But the reality of choosing this system was because Zenith was the American-based company, which it no longer is. It's a Korean-based company now, but now a part of LG. And I guess we're going to have to see how politics in the world play out. But I have no doubt that technology will continue to improve the receiver's capability, and it will get better. I don't know if it'll ever be perfect. I don't know if it'll ever be equal to what we could do with analog. HYWK2J.
Hold on now. You don't know if it'll ever be equal to what we can do in analog. When it works well, the definition on the screen is so much higher. The number of channels that can be transmitted simultaneously is so much greater. The alternate channels of information, whether it be news reporting or whatever, is so much easier to implement. I'm wondering why you have doubt as to whether or not the newer digital techniques are better than fully implemented analog techniques. Run that by again, Eric. Go ahead.
All right, here's my point, Dick. The digital is the most fabulous television picture you'll ever see, and the greatest amount of information that you can get, as long as you can get it to lock up and work. I can show you analog TV where you can just about barely perceive the picture, hear the sound very well, and get information come across. And in that same environment, I don't think there's no way in hell that you're going to pick up a digital signal.
Okay. If I've got a digital receiver that is smart enough, do I stand a chance of getting just the audio at a greater threshold than the audio plus video? If I only wanted the audio, is there any way I could design a receiver to receive the currently transmitted signal and get that audio at a smaller number of microvolts with a worser amount of multipath? Over to you, Eric.
And the answer to the $64,000 question is no. No way. you still have to take that stream of fire to get the audio package out of it. If you can't take the stream of fire, you ain't getting nothing. It's that simple. Okay, that was, again, another reason for the concept of EVSB, enhanced VSB, M&H, because it'll be much easier to get some data out of that signal. You can't get data out of the signal. You don't get anything. You get nothing. You get Zippo.
Wow. Okay. The current system and the current standard, what percentage of its design, from your point of view, was done by Gary? Over to you, Eric.
He was like one of three or four people that created the whole system. So, I mean, you know, they didn't create the concept of making video into packet. They didn't create the concept of making MPEG. You know, that was done in the world's universities, actually. They didn't create... They've just strictly worked on the RF portion of it. That's their thing. I think it was four guys, basically. One super whoopee-doo mathematical theorist, and three really whoopee-doo electrical engineers, Gary being the one who kind of put all the pieces together and made a whole system out of it.
Okay, so it looks to me like he took one from column A, two from column B, and so on. He took the best of a number of technologies, put it all together in what looks like a pretty smart system. Not perfect. Nothing can be perfect. But you have reason to believe that for our environment, not the European environment, that the best combination of the available technologies is what we now have. Or is there a little bit of, hey, it's good enough, let's settle on it for now, and maybe we'll change it later? Do you think we're more into the first category or the second category? Over to you, Eric.
Well, I think it's more the third category. I think Kennard was in charge of the FCC at that particular point in time. And we did that consensus decision about choosing which technology to use, because there were a number of technologies that were up for consideration at that point. And believe it or not, if you should actually talk to Gary, he will tell you that he spent 3 months at the FCC about, I think it's almost a year ago now, or a little less than a year ago, teaching the FCC how EVSB works. So, go figure.
This document that I recently mailed you a copy of, was that part of his presentation to do the teaching?
Yes, it is. Well, don't forget, he's been going all around the country for various different groups, broadcasters, engineering manufacturers, so on and so forth. And he's also very active in the ATSC and SMPTE, and there's a few other organizations that help set the standards. So,
yeah. Now, I should have checked this a long time ago. Is Gary a ham radio operator? Has he ever had a license, to your knowledge?
No, I've asked that question several times, no.
Wow, so he's the exception to the rule. By that I mean, a rule that exists with me is that a high percentage of the people who really understand RF, video, antennas, propagation characteristics, and so on, tend to be ham radio operators. And they're ham radio operators in philosophy, if not in reality. I've met one or two people who will build things in their basement exactly like a ham radio operator would. They're pack rats, they go to flea markets, they gather all kinds of things from all kinds of places, put it together, and build the circuitry they want. And occasionally the guy just never got around to getting a license. In the old days, the answer was, hey, the Morse code is too difficult. Nowadays, now you don't have a Morse code requirement, a hell of a lot more people are getting a license. Okay, you guys, we've had our dose of digital television for tonight, and I can tell this is not the end. This is just the beginning. And as February 17th approaches, this is going to become more and more the subject to be discussed. Before we open up the mailbag, anybody got any further questions or comments? Give me your call letters right now, K2LAW in the TechNet. There being none, Mel, you've got the floor. And what was the mail like this week? And boy, are we going to get questions in the coming week. You got it, Mel.
Yeah, this is K2KEY. Oh, oh boy, this HD business is, I got a lot of them, but I think covered a heck of a lot of it again this week. The only questions and answers I will give to this, first of all, you mentioned earlier cell phone. Yes, I have a cell phone. I carry it with only one agreement, that it's for only emergency use. Do not call me to tell me, oh, what are you doing, what do you have for breakfast today or something, or some casual nonsense. I told them, I said, I will give it back to you. So got that agreement, the family is, just in case you have to get in touch with me, go off a bit of emergency. And that's my extent. It's a simple cell phone. And happily, I'd say sometimes I don't have it ring for a week or two or three, Dick. So that's the my extent of cell phone activity. Wait a second. Let's see what else I have here to comment on. Okay, I got something else to say. Okay, we also mentioned about the ARRL wants Sam to somewhat involve ourselves with his HD business and explanation. Well, I think one thing, let's say, I think if anything, Sam should keep a low profile with this. And I'll tell you why. Come February, there are areas here that I could say where people are not on cable or anything. Indoor antennas, plenty, plenty indoor antenna people. They don't realize that. And they were very happy to see that snowy, ghosty picture, or to have the vertical flip every 3 seconds and all, and made them, give them what they needed in their situation. Come February, and there's not going to be anything on that screen, and there's a ham radio operator in the neighborhood, who do you think is going to be questioned as the first of why I don't have a picture stick over?
Oh, you're absolutely right. In certain neighborhoods, not on your street though, because your neighbors know you to be a fairly reasonable guy, a helpful guy. If your next door neighbor had television interference, you're the kind of guy that would say, "Okay, I'll help you out until we solve this problem. What hour of what day is your favorite program? I'll make sure I don't transmit on the offending frequency at that time until we solve this problem." So I put on the right filter, until you put on the right filter, until I reorient my antenna, whatever. You're the kind of guy that's got a good relationship with his neighbors. And so there's no real problem there. There's a certain kind of ham who will tell his neighbors that I've got an FCC license, I've got the permission from the federal government to do this. If there's a problem on your set, it is your equipment, your problem, your television manufacturer, and ain't got nothing to do with me. You say those words. Even if there's a slim chance they're accurate, you say those words, and you have just started a range war. Pretty soon that neighbor will say to himself, I just spent $2,000 for this set. For me and my grandmother, who lives here, it's our main source of entertainment. Because of you, I can't use that entertainment. I'm going to start using every legal means I've got to get rid of you, to stop you from doing that. You're the unusual person in this neighborhood. You're the one that's creating the problem. They've got that attitude, and you can easily trigger them into that attitude. We are the second-class citizen as far as the neighborhood is concerned, as far as our rights are concerned. When it comes to putting up a tower, when it comes to creating interference on any of their electronics, their cell phone, their pager, their hi-fi system, their television set, whatever, we are the second-class citizen, and we have to behave very carefully, in my opinion, because we all live in each other's pocket in that neighborhood. You got to keep peace in the neighborhood, or life's going to get very complicated. Unless you like moving a whole lot, you got to bend over backwards to keep peace in the neighborhood. That's my attitude. Maybe I'm too compliant, but that philosophy has worked for me. I'll bet it has worked for you, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
No, not quite. I had once a neighbor here. Thank God he's gone. In fact, he was the type of person that was so disliked on this block that when he finally moved out, not one person said good luck or take care or anything. They didn't even give him just a glance. Just were happy to see him go. And when I tried to accommodate with him, because he blamed me for everything, including ruining his lawn, that my antenna was ruining his lawn, he tried to convince the gardener to give him a letter saying that that antenna is casting a shadow or something, and it's making the grass not green, or blah, 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 and a whole bunch of nonsense, so that he can sue me for a new lawn. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. The FCC many times, refused to cooperate in any way I tried talking to him. He said, the only thing he says you could do is take your antenna down. That's all. Take your antenna down. I want it out of here. You're rude. Then there was the property value, and on, couldn't reason with him, Dick. So now, with a thing like this coming along, if there's anybody, thankfully, I don't think around here using any kind of outdoor antenna to receive TV or whatever, I know they're all on cable here, everything laid up to date, so thankfully I don't have to worry about that. But there are areas, I'm going to tell you, the hams, I think, are going to be in trouble again, over.
Cuckoo! Okay, I hope you're wrong, but I know what you're worried about there, Mel. And let me just type something in here. Okay, I'm getting an additional piece of information. Now, when it comes to what you said on cell phones, my goodness, an awful lot of people completely forget where they are and what they're doing when they use a cell phone. They get involved with the conversation of the person they're talking to, and there's a darn many people think they are in a telephone booth, a soundproof booth. We've seen it in supermarkets, in restaurants. The case that happened to me this week is a guy who I work with, and I've worked with him for 3 years, know him very well, very reasonable guy. He's going through a somewhat complicated divorce. He got on his cell phone while standing in the hall outside of an open door to a laboratory that I was in. Standing in the hall with a fairly loud voice, he's telling his friend all kinds of details of what's going on between him, his wife, the divorce, the new girlfriend, and what the new girlfriend does. Wow. By the same token, we've all seen people waving their arms in the air, shouting into a cell phone while driving an automobile down an expressway. My goodness, in either case, there's something about the flip in philosophy that happens in a human mind when they're on a one-to-one telephone duplex circuit. And that's part of it. We amateurs talk simplex. We talk for a little while and then stop talking and listen for a little while. That's the way we do ham radio, even when we're mobile. But when it's a full duplex circuit and you're talking to somebody you're excited with that you are mad at or whatever, wow. There are times when reason goes out the window. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Roger, this is K2KEY. Yes, I've had the same experience and in a class and in an auditorium. Every minute somebody's cell phone was ringing. It was extremely disturbing to have that, they know they're going into a place where it was going to be a highly technical discussion and not to turn the goddamn things off. And every minute one rings here, the other one rings here, and they hello, and you know, it just drowns out the whole moderator and everything, a complete disruption, you know, of your train of thought and everything. Very, very inconsiderate people with the cell phone business. I've never seen such rude people come out of the woodwork in the last years, Dick. So nothing to be, overly surprised that this happened, Dick. Over.
Okay. I'm just sending this out as a warning that the vast majority of the public just loves their cell phone. I mean, remember the very first time that Citizens Band radios came along? You had that program called the Dukes of Hazzard, and boy, they could climb into their automobiles, pick up the microphone, and say, "Hey, John, you got your ears on?" And they're talking to their buddy a zillion miles away, who's right on that channel, listening to them, talks back to them immediately, and it's as good as being in the room with the guy who's 20 miles away. An attractive-looking idea that program really made, walking and talking and remote communication, very convenient-looking. And along came the real thing called cell phones. And boy, there's zillions of people walking down Fifth Avenue every single day. They may have a Bluetooth thing plugged into their ear. They look like they're talking to themselves. They're really talking to somebody on the other end of a telephone circuit as they're walking down Fifth Avenue. The idea of being able to walk and talk just turns the public on. But the crazy thing that they do when they're not watching both ways, when they cross a corner or driving an automobile or in a place like a library or a auditorium or a classroom, all kinds of crazy reasoning goes out the window. I think it's time you open your mailbag. What kind of mail did you get this week, Mel? Go ahead.
Hey, just a final word. You're 100% right. There's a whole thing that went on here with the school that the kids were having. The kids put up a big protest, and they got the parents to agree with them that they should be able to use their cell phones in the classroom to text message one another or whatever. And the teachers were starting to object. They can't keep control of the class. They can't keep, you know, the class information rolling because these kids are hitting and text messaging across the room and everything. And the parents defended the kids that this is should be nothing wrong with this. This is conveyance of information or whatever. I mean, it's gotten already out of hand, Dick. All right, one more thing I was going to say. And as far as hams go, and it's HD again, the last words were just a quick story. When I was young, my mother was walking with somebody that's on the block, and they were talking about this and that. Why my mother had to mention that I was a ham radio operator, my son got, you know, I guess they were talking about children and all. And this other woman made a comment. She says, oh, is it possible, and she said to my mother, is it possible that's why my 20-year-old toaster that worked perfect for all the years stopped toasting? I mean, that story comes to my mind. I laugh about it now, but how serious it was back in those days, Dick. Over.
I sort of know where that comes from, Mel. To the average American who does not understand science, technology, math, or electronics in general, they live in fear that the refrigerator will stop, the air conditioner will stop, the telephone will stop, the hi-fi will stop, whatever. Because they know they've got to hire a service person. The automobile will stop. They have to hire a service person, and they're at the mercy of that service person because they know nothing about it. So, a ham radio might create interference to a radio or a television. To that simplistic minded, technically simplistically minded person, the toaster is a piece of electronics, the television set is a piece of electronics, either one is subject to failure. It's just a lack of understanding of what's behind that front panel. So I sort of understand, I don't know how a person can live a life not knowing anything about the appliance we're so dependent on. There are people who change a light bulb with fear and trepidation that they won't do it right and they'll get electrocuted in the process. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Yes, precisely. So I'm saying, you're jamming this DVD down a lot of senior citizens' throats. I think what should have been done, it should have been a two situations or a compatible situation. Those are still on analog, very happy with the indoor picture with the snow and the ghosts and all that. Fine, stay with it the way it is, continue. And just like when color TV came along, the people that had the old black and white TVs like we were talking about earlier did not all of a sudden say, uh-oh, the channels are going to color. That's it. No more TV. It didn't happen that way, Dick, and I think this is the same, and the analogy is very close. It should still be available without all this nonsense of tones. People that, listen, you're going to have to upgrade, get a box, get a this and a not, go for an antenna. These people are, I can say, I sympathize with a lot of these older people around, you know, the areas around Brooklyn here that are on fixed income and a rent control, you know, a stabilized apartment. They're just barely getting by because their Social Security check is not keeping up with inflation, Dick. Over.
Without a doubt, it was a tough call for Congress on this one. Congress, FCC, NAB, CEI, that was a tough call. You have to make a decision that gives the most amount of good to the most amount of people. There is a huge demand for frequency spectrum. And if the new digital television can give us more channels in less megacycles of bandwidth, freeing up those channels for first responders, emergency services, and whatever. In the big picture, the whole United States, in theory, comes out ahead. The people on fixed income in assisted living conditions, they're going to be hurt. But the benefit hopefully outweighs the detriment of this particular decision. No decision that's this far-reaching is going to be without side effects. It's like every pharmaceutical you can possibly use has some tremendous side effects for a whole lot of complicated reasons, and you and I will have some further discussions on that in the coming weeks privately. So medications, you got to be careful. And so if you decide to take a particular medication and you hope that the risk-to-benefit ratio is in your favor, and so those agencies, when they made this decision, I think they believed they were doing the most good for the most number of people. A more cynical person will say, hey, there was a whole lot of money behind it, and that's why it was done. I think it's a little bit of both. K2KUY, K2RIW.
Roger, the only thing I will say in final words, that TV, to a lot of these people that are basically, I would call them almost shut-in, especially in the wintertime, they can... You can't get out in the last few days with the ice we've had, the weather conditions we've had. Well, these people are basically shut in. Their life, in many cases, revolves around the TV set to a great deal. It gives them a way, an entertainment, a way out of that little cubbyhole that they have, little apartments and all. I mean, I've seen this firsthand, how people, you know, have to get by on very meager situations. And to take this little bit of entertainment that gives them a little cheer in life and now tell them, sorry, it's gone. I mean, the well-to-do cause no problem ever. But you're picking on the most vulnerable part of our population, Dick, and I think this is wrong. That's my final word. Over.
QIQ with a comment?
Go ahead, Glenn.
I don't know, this is just an opinion from my side, but I think overall that it was a poor decision overall, because right now I think like 90% of the people, you know, who watch view television are watching on either some kind of like a cable, a Fios, you know, DirecTV. So many people are actually connected up to these networks that they can afford it. And, you know, your average middle class person is basically watching through some kind of a cable-related type of service. And the people that are that last 10%, or the majority of that last 10%, are people like Mel was saying, the ones who are the least able to afford something new and different. And was it really necessary to change the format of that VHS spectrum? And just, in other words, all the high definition and the digital modes could have all been done on the cable systems, and there was really, I don't feel there was ever really a need to do it on the analog. I could be wrong on that, but I don't know, it's just an opinion. Back over to you, Dick, KC2QIQ.
On the input, I heard WS2N. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, this is a thought I've had for a while, but I haven't heard anybody mention it. I don't know. I think in the back of their minds, what they got planned is, you know, once you have everything digitalized, going into everybody's home, you have it now, of course, with cable and Fios and satellite, but what they need now is to do that with the people getting their transmissions from, you know, from their antenna. Once that's digitalized, it's only one step away from encoding it. You know, you could all, you know, decode and encode system. You know, how far down the road, a couple of years, 5 years, 10 years, they could decide, well, okay, only if you pay now, you're going to get this reception to your antenna. I mean, you know, now you're going to need not only the converter box, but a converter box that's going to be capable of decoding the signals. If you don't have that, you're going to find yourself paying for it. I think in the long run they're thinking, let's get everybody on board with paying for the signals, you know, like they had in Europe, you know, from the conception of TV, you know, they've been paying for signals over there forever. I think that's the ultimate goal, but I don't know, it's just a speculation on my part. Back to you, Dick. By the way, I have one little space report. Holidays here, I don't have much, but I have one report.
Very fine, Paul. And I see where you're going. I think you're being a little pessimistic. Yes, the BBC residents pay for their television. That's the bad news. The good news, they have a hell of a lot less advertising than we do because they're paying for it. The whole philosophy of broadcast in the United States has always been over-the-air broadcast is free. You're willing to pay for cable because you're getting something that has an infrastructure that requires a great big installation. So somebody has to make a profit on making that great big installation. But in return, you're getting five times as many channels and some of its premium material, like first-run movies and sporting events and whatever. And so if you're willing to pay for it, it's there. But the general philosophy of the United States is over-the-air broadcast is free. I don't think we're going to shift away from that. I really think that there always will be over-the-air broadcast that's free. I'll bet you Eric is going to back me on that one if Eric just happens to be there. Eric, are you still there? KE2EJ? K2LIW? Yeah, by now he's... We've tapped his brain for a solid 2 hours, and finally he went away. Okay. One other thing I can remember, Mel, which I'm going to get to you in a second, Paul, and that is from roughly 1956 to roughly 1963, in the town of Middle Island, Long Island, to my knowledge, I was the television repair person for that town. I was a late teenager. I'd learned how to fix television sets, and various people by word of mouth started hiring me to do that. So I probably got into 50 different homes in that town, maybe 30 different homes in that town, and repaired their television sets. Two or three of those homes contained people of approximately 50 years of age. I'm around 17 years of age, and that seemed ancient to me. So what they said sounded reasonable. And to a person, they said, me and my wife, we're 50 years of age. My children have grown up and they're out of the house. My life is over. All that I have left is the entertainment I get out of a television set. I'm sitting here waiting to die. At 50 years age, my life is over. That sounded reasonable to me then when I was 17. Now that I'm way beyond 50, wow, that sounds awfully unreasonable. Why the heck didn't that person have a hobby? Why didn't he go to the library and learn to read a book? Why didn't he take a walk around the neighborhood? Why didn't he find a cause to back? You got to find a purpose. Even if it's just to build a better widget with your electronic capability, you got to have a purpose. A man without a goal is in an awful lot of trouble. K2KEY, K2RIW. We amateurs, boy, do we have goals.
Yeah, Roger, this is K2KEY. You're talking about people that are capable and able. I'm talking about people that are basically shut in. This is the difference. This is all fine and good. There's no excuse, like you say, for a person that's physically able to get out. Age 50 should say that's the end of my life. These are people that have gone through much older, people way up in age that have gone through some very difficult times in their life. Many of them foreigners that came from very bad situations. And then when they came to this country, somewhat better, but still difficult. And now the only thing they've got left, Dick, is their little bit of entertainment in many cases. And this you're going to take away from them. They can't afford cable. I don't care, whatever it is. They're barely, I could say, scraping by. That's why, I could say, one particular place here has volunteered to take the coupon and put the box in at the rest of it at their cost. And they're like already, I think, changing their mind because they just can't seem to get it to work in a lot of places, Dick. It's not one or here or there. There are areas here where you could go through the building, and I would say that almost everybody there is on an indoor antenna in many sections here of Bright Beach over.
And somebody's going to have to go in there and do a study. I'd like to believe if the box is good enough and the rabbit ears is good enough and the person has a window of the building that faces the Empire State Building, that they will get digital television reception. And if that is true, it won't take a lot of technology to put a number of rabbit ears or a rabbit ear with an amplifier in that window with some cable distribution that runs along the edges of the walls of that building and gives the television reception to the people on the other side of the building. I didn't say it's an easy solution, but I'd like to believe a volunteer organization will come along and do something like that. You and I know the technology is there to solve that problem, and it doesn't have to cost $1 zillion to do it. And I guarantee there are amateur organizations that on a slow basis will volunteer to do some of that work. K2KEY, K2RIW.
It says K2KEY, all right, the final words on this. There's an area right there, the elevated subway runs through there. If you're on the south side of that L, which is a lot of apartment buildings up and down these blocks, old apartment buildings, way back, they go way, way back, and when that train comes through, oh boy, if you're on an indoor antenna, it is miserable. And if you're on the wrong side of the building, on top of it, the reception is really, I'm telling you, so marginal, even with new TV sets and everything. There isn't much you're going to do. As far as putting an antenna even on the other side, can you imagine you're going to have to run a wire maybe through the hall and everything like that? Oh, it's going to pick up the liability if this wire falls and electrocutes somebody, or they trip over it, or they strangle someone. Dick, it just can't happen. There's just no way that you can do anything in there, because right away, say it's liability. What's your liability? There, that right away puts the conjunct on it, over.
Okay. It is possible that somebody has already run Category 5 cable through the drop ceiling so that some of those people have internet connection. So this wiring could be run through the drop ceiling. I know it's an installation. I know it's going to take some time, but if the choice is to do that and have television reception as opposed to having none for these, I'm going to call them shut-ins, there's got to be a solution. I don't think this is an impossible problem. I'll admit it's difficult. I don't think it's an impossible problem, Mel. Go ahead.
Okay. Got a solution. I will propose it. I'll subtly mention it. I don't see any way out that there is anything. These cable companies and all, they're tyrants. They're not going to give you nothing for nothing, and you know it. I had it out with the cable company here. I said that when they pulled the cable through my yard here, I said, I should get free cable reception, being you're using my property here. You're going through my yard. You're putting it on a pole in the back. Well, we can because there's a telephone pole. The telephone company, we got an agreement with the telephone company. I said, you got an agreement to put a telephone line there, but you didn't have an agreement to stick a cable there that you're going to get paid for. I mean, where's my consideration that you're adding another eyesore cable? But you can't do nothing about it because they have what they call utility right away. But let me tell you something. You won't get the right the time of day for nothing. They bill you for every little nook and granny. You know that, Dick. So don't look for them for any kind of sympathy for these people, over.
I hear what you're saying. And the almighty dollar sometimes dominates. Oh, well. Tell me what some of your mail was like this week.
Hey, let's get back to ham radio. Get off the soapbox. Like I say, I just feel... I still have sympathy, really. I have a lot of sympathy because I've had a number of people in the family on an age and all, know what they've gone through and all, how hard it is to live and everything. And I haven't got that situation, of course, in existence anymore, but I can feel for those now that are still going through those situations. One of these questions here, that just comes up over and over. What is the guide to buying secondhand equipment? I've got a lot of these emails. They keep mentioning different rigs, but all right, I won't specify a rig. But how do you go about buying a secondhand rig? What do you pay for a piece of equipment? How do you judge and come up with a reasonable price? Because I'd like to to a number of these younger people like to buy a ham piece of ham equipment. I can't afford a new piece of equipment, but I have no idea what the piece of equipment is worth now. Do you have any rule of thumb that you use? Over.
It's not a rule of thumb. It is...